The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private. Trust Ireland's leading private hospitals with locations nationwide, including Dublin, Cork and Limerick.
This is News Talk.
The final scheduled round of Brexit trade talks begins today, and still negotiators from the UK and EU seem no closer to reaching an agreement. But will this important date simply be extended like all of those Brexit deadlines which have gone before? Is there really any chance of a deal being struck? Well, Michael White is former associate editor of The Guardian, and he's on the line now. Michael, good morning.
Good morning.
So, the final round, but is it likely to be the final round?
Well, it's a mug's game to make any firm predictions of this one, as you and I both know over the years. There's slightly more cheerful mood music this morning, not in the FT, which is the best British paper to cover these things, but the Times, which is bit Eurosceptic, but pretty fair, says that Barnier has agreed to start drafting the legal text, don't go to sleep already, dear listener, without getting heads of agreement on the fishing and the state aid business, which are the two outstanding tricky issues. And that would seem to imply a bit of movement. But whatever they do, it's possible to get a sort of pretty basic agreement. That's what the experts tell us, which the Brits will dress up as a triumph for hardball. But come January the 1st, we'll be counting the lorries in the new lorry parks being built in Kent for the Kent passport.
Yeah, and obviously some of our trucks will be bypassing the land bridge and trying to somehow get to continental Europe without going through the delays that will be inevitable at Dover. Controversial internal market bill, that's going ahead with all the bits that offend against EU sensibilities.
Yes, the bit about threatening to break international law, but only slightly, in order to defend what they claim is a threat to free passage of goods and services between Northern Ireland and the mainland Britain. I think that was a bit of British bluff, and as I understand it, the EU has said, well, no, we won't be treating you as we will be treating you as a third country, not cutting you adrift if we don't get a deal. And that may have been a bit of bogus saber rattling. The EU goes in for saber rattling in negotiations too. Everybody does it. Come on. So we don't take it all too seriously. But the internal market bill, Pat, creates a whole new set of problems, because I went to a seminar this week at the Institute for Government, which is a terribly high-minded think tank. And the experts there from different parts of Britain were saying, well, of course, we're trying to get an agreement to replace the way the EU ran regulations and standards and product safety and all that stuff. We're trying to recreate that in the UK. And guess what? Northern Ireland, Scotland and Wales, particularly Scotland, are complaining that England will impose its version of standards, chlorinated chicken perhaps, on them. Or another one I hadn't thought of, Wales wants to ban 9 types of single-use plastic. I know it's small beer, but on the other hand, it's all about saving the planet, so go along with it. And England only wants to ban 3. Now, Wales can ban the 9, but since so much of Wales's produce comes from England, then, of course, not much they can do about it, is there? So there's a whole lot of, and you end up thinking, well, England is behaving, or planning to behave, the way it's complained for 30 years that Brussels treats it. One of the experts said England will leave the EU, but have to create a kind of version of a single market policy, possibly with qualified majority voting for the United Kingdom. Well, well.
I'm just wondering, is what will happen in the end simply copy and paste, and then change a few things grammatically around the place? So it basically is the EU set of rules with a little bit of, I suppose, the Queen's English thrown in.
Well, if you wanted to be constructive, you could say, well, since we're starting off on January the 1st, all our stuff is EU compliant because we've been in the EU since 1973. So, you know, it's all okay. Then the question is, what do we do thereafter? State aid is a good case. Boris Johnson's brain, Dominic Cummings, wants to create sort of, he wants to invest in high-tech industries of the future, like the Americans did in the 50s with a thing called DARPA, for defense research at Stanford University in California. He was very taken by that and must have read a book. But of course, the idea of Britain, which has been dominated by economic Thatcherism for 40 years, gagging to break EU rules on state aid is a bit puzzling, especially since the French and the Germans do far more state aid than we do. So it ought to be fixable with goodwill on both sides, but the EU is afraid that we want to have our cake and eat it, to use a Johnson phrase. You know, get access to the markets, but go our own way on all sorts of regulations, drive down standards. We deny that. We say they just want to control us. And in that dreadful phrase, we are now going to be an independent sovereign country. They'll learn.
Now, Michael, could the pandemic, and it's a horrible thing to say, but could it be a blessing in disguise for Boris Johnson's beleaguered government, where Labour are making strides in the polls, but, you know, they won't get an election anytime soon? So the pandemic, all the misery that might be inflicted by departing from the EU and the end of the transition period, instead of blaming it where it should be, where the blame should lie, you can blame it all on the pandemic.
Yeah, I think that's a serious possibility. They're hoping to bury Brexit in the disruption caused by the pandemic confusion. I must say, last week, Mr. Gove, who's in charge of withdrawal arrangements in the Lorrie Parks in Kent, issued a, what's it called, a reasonable worst-case scenario. I learned the new initials, RWCS. You can use it in your private life. The reasonable worst-case scenario said, well, of course, there will be disruption even if we don't get a deal, or even if we do at the beginning while we get used to all this new paperwork and all the rest of it. But after three months, it'll start to sort itself out. And then he said, of course, COVID may suppress demand, so there'll be fewer lorries crossing the channel anyway. So there's good news out of COVID. One way to look at it, isn't it? I should add right away that the pharmaceutical industry is complaining today that you know, there'll be a problem with mutual recognition of drug standards unless there's a deal. Jim Shannon, name known to some of your listeners, DUP MP in the North, was complaining about his insulin. He's type 2 diabetic, and he says, can I be sure of getting my insulin? Needless to say, cheerful Mr. Gove said it would all be fine on the night.
Well, there was one way to make sure that he got his insulin, and that would be to support those who opposed Brexit, which, of course, they did not do at the time, even though in Northern Ireland there was a majority against the Brexit process. But yeah, that's all water under the bridge.
You wouldn't think so. You wouldn't think so, listening to the DUP. I should say, worth noting, since you've raised the point, both Keir Starmer in his conference speech, virtual conference speech, of course, the Labour Party last week, and Ed Davey, he's the new leader of the British Lib Dems, no need to remember his name, I fear, he's very much a yesterday's man. Both of them, both keen Remainers and exponents of the second referendum, said, you know, Brexit's over, you can't go on fighting the Brexit battle. Neither of them talked much about Brexit at all. That's a battle they've fought and they've lost. We've got to move on. That was the message. And that's been quite quietly received by the sort of people you might expect to get very agitated. So I think the Remainers and the second referendumers have said, we've got to do this. Maybe we'll rejoin one day, but we're not, you know, that's all yesterday's talk. That's true.
Michael,
they're right, but they've been a bit slow.
Michael White, former associate editor of The Guardian, thank you very much for joining us.